If you enjoy this podcast and would like to support us in exchange for exclusive access, early access, and so much more, check us out over on Patreon. You can find us at www.patreon.com/AAOpera.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to AA Opera Podcast episode 63.
Woohoo! It's so nice to be back in the swing of new episodes. It's really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, I've missed it. I've missed our chats. And just, it's been a month. But, Ashley, before we get into that, how are you doing and how's your week been?
Yeah, I'm doing really well. I'm finally back in the Northeast, which is really nice, of course. Just lots of food, lots of drink and lots of catch-ups. But it's just so nice to be back. I think just actually getting out of London for the first time in a year is making me actually be able to switch off, because it's so hard, as we've said so many times before, when you take holiday, inverted commas, but you're just still in the same place. It's so hard to switch off. So I'm feeling very chilled out and having a great time.
Did you do anything special for bank holiday then?
We had a lovely barbecue in my mum's back garden yesterday, which I really appreciate, because we're not allowed barbecues in on our balconies in London. So any opportunity for a barbecue. The weather wasn't that great, but we powered on through and had a great time. It was really nice. But Abby, how are you doing?
I'm fine. I feel like the last month was a year long. It's just been very crazy.
Been a bit of a whirlwind.
But I did actually face a big fear of mine, and I went back to the dentist for the first time in 7 years.
Wow. Congratulations, Abby. I'm really proud of you for that. 7 years, though. Is everything all right?
Yeah, I just had one cavity filled. They're like, this isn't too bad if you haven't been to the dentist in so long. And I have to get a very, very sexy night guard.
Oh, nice.
But I had to get a COVID test done yesterday. And it was a weird thing. And the guy said to me that I had very sexy nostrils. He might not have said that specifically, but he did mention my nostrils. So I'm going with the fact that he has said I had sexy nostrils.
I mean, each to their own. Avi, you know, you've got a beautiful face. But I mean, who thinks nostrils are sexy? I mean, like...
I don't know. We were just saying, like, imagine what his life is like. Oh, I'm really attracted to nostrils. I made up this whole extra life for him. I was talking to my dad about it, too, and we were just like, oh, yeah, he's just really all into the nostril section.
Wow. Wow.
He just, like, I think he said, oh, these are the nostrils the way I like them. And I was like,
what? Like, I mean, if you've been doing however many COVID tests, then I guess maybe you would find an attraction to nostrils, maybe.
But I guess also then he found his calling. If that is what attracts him to people, he can really find his, like, meant to be, his one true love.
It's faked, yeah. He's made it. He's living his best life.
I know, I thought it was hilarious. But I'm also really excited because next week I finally get to have a singing lesson in person.
Amazing. Good. I'll warn you, like, you might cry because I got really emotional in life.
So I'm very excited. But it is time to introduce this week's guest, which is the phenomenal Elizabeth Llewellyn, and she's here to talk to us about her brand new debut album,
Heart and Hereafter. It's a fantastic, very exciting album, and we get to hear all about it. So we hope you guys enjoy.
And after you listen to this podcast, go over on Spotify and check out, because it is available now to stream. So go.
How exciting! Woo! Hello, Elizabeth. A very warm welcome to AA Opera Podcast. It's a delight to have you with us here today. Would you like to start off by introducing yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name's Elizabeth Llewellyn. I'm a British opera singer, born in London and now living in Yorkshire.
Ooh, nice change. You did the escape to the country style thing.
Very much. Yeah, edge of village. Yeah, all of that. Period features, as you can see.
Good
Yeah.
choice.
The whole
Good
nine
call.
yards.
Can you actually share with us what your first experience with opera was?
My first experience was actually at the Proms. I saw a performance of the Magic Flute at the age of 16, roughly, and it was a semi-staged production. I was just thinking today, it wasn't that memorable. I can't remember that much about it, but that was my first experience of
Yeah.
opera.
Good.
So what was your first memorable experience?
Oh gosh. I think actually it's probably sort of going to college and hearing postgrads. They used to do excerpts of operas for those who were sort of further on in their education and postgrads. And so I think the first sort of excerpts of opera I saw were excerpts from Callisto. And the last scene of Der Rosenkavalier. So yeah,
Amazing.
it was yeah, it was actually really almost two ends of the spectrum, but they were very well directed, and I was kind of weirdly drawn in, even though I was already at college. I hadn't quite worked out what opera actually was until
Yeah, and I
then.
guess conservatoire is a place that you just fully immerse yourself in that. So, yes, very good. But we are very excited today to talk to you about your debut album, Heart and Hereafter, a collection of songs by Samuel Coleridge Taylor. Can you tell us the why of this album?
There are several whys, really. The one that means the most to me, well, there were two. The one that really means the most to me is that whenever anyone makes an album, unless you already have an album deal with a big company, a big label, every aspect of the album is paid for by the artist. It doesn't come for free, it doesn't come from the sky, it comes out of their own pockets. And that's a lot of money. So if I felt that if I was going to spend that amount of money on my debut album, it needed to be something rather than just a sort of vanity project. It needed to be something that was meaningful and that left something in the industry or out in the world that wasn't there before, so that there's some element of legacy, if you like. And so I felt it was really important to do that, and to showcase Coleridge Taylor's songs. There were lots of semi-professional bits and pieces out on YouTube or on little websites, and there's a semi-professional recording, but there isn't actually an easily accessible professional recording of his songs, a collection of his songs, and I felt I could do that.
Yes, absolutely, and it's so far away from, your traditional album of just a selection of opera arias. Reading into how much thought and research has gone into this album, it's fascinating, and we can't wait to hear more about that today.
Thank you.
And leading on from that question, when did the research for this album all begin?
The research probably began back in 2018, sort of 2017, 2018. The idea or the seed was planted before that in 2013, but I actually started, sort of going through archives, going to the British Library, reading biographies, all of that, round about 2018.
Amongst your digging, you discovered a huge output in the Coleridge Taylor canon, over 100 songs. And we wanted to know today, how did you go about selecting the songs that would make it
Oh, that
onto the
was
album?
tough, honestly. Oh, it was, I can't
I
even
bet.
sufficiently describe to you actually how long I spent in that practice room with these songs. Literally, I went through each one. I discovered almost about 100 songs. There are probably at least as many still waiting to be discovered and wait, at least. It broke my heart having to leave the British Library for the last time, knowing that there were so many others I could have, sort of looked at. And I guess a certain amount of our job is about instinct and, sort of personal taste, really. And as I was going through each song and, learning the piano part, learning the vocal part, putting the two together, timing them, I just had to go with my instinct. What did I like? What did I like the sound of? What did I have an instinct for in terms of, oh, that people will like this, or that has an instant appeal, or that turn of phrase musically, or in the poetry is interesting, and I want to include that. So that's how I did it. It was slightly random, but it also meant that I was only singing things that I really enjoyed and that I was really interested in.
Yeah, but I guess that's the beauty of your own debut album and putting that together is that you have that artistic license to present something that is just very meaningful to you and put together by your
Yes, I think
personal
there's
taste.
something, there's a lot to be said for that. I think that's the one of the benefits of not being on a record deal, because you don't have that dictated to you. The only dictates really is the length of the CD. And yeah, there were some things that didn't make. Well, only there was one song, "Big Lady Moon," which comes from Five Fairy Ballads, and I think there's scope for doing a children's album because those Five Fairy Ballads are absolutely charming, but they just didn't make the cut this time. And so there were lots of those sorts of stories of things that almost made it, but even during the recording 3 days, there were another couple of cuts that I made that I just thought, no, it just doesn't sit well with everything else, and there's going to hopefully be other opportunities to present those.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that's
Yeah.
not lost work because you're obviously aware of all of these songs now, so putting together recitals or even suggesting it to colleagues, hopefully we'll hear a lot
I
more
hope so.
of your
I hope
songs
so.
in the near future.
One of the points of the album is really to sort of put the songs out there and to get people excited, particularly people at college, or people who love doing English song recitals. When you're thinking of your Elgar, Vaughan Williams, Stanford, whatever, Finzi, John Ireland, think of Coleridge Taylor. And now there's going to be a resource for people to actually hear what the printed vocal scores sound like. And so what I'd love to see is many more people performing his songs.
Yes, definitely.
I can't. I totally can't
Good.
wait. I'm like itching to look at them now. But in
Mm.
episode 5 of Inside Heart and
Yeah.
Hereafter, you took us into your music studio. And you mentioned that you
Yes.
learned the piano parts first and then the voice. Is this something you do regularly when studying songs and arias? And what are the benefits
Yes
of doing it
is
this
the
way?
answer to your first part of the question. I do that all the time, unless I'm very pushed for time in terms of learning new music. And I do that really because I started off life as a pianist. And so that's my first instinct, to go to the piano and get the music under my hands. Somehow it just feels, I feel better about approaching it that way. Also, it gives me a chance to just work out the harmonic structure of the piece, be it an aria or an entire opera, or a song, to get a feel for Yeah, just the flow of it, and perhaps how the composer might have felt it. I am, in one sense, I'm quite a tactile person when it comes to learning music, and I need to get it into my body, strangely, before I get it into my brain. And yes, I mean, if you have those piano skills to be able to do that, some people don't, but if you do, then I'd highly recommend it. It just means that it takes you away from recordings and you start building your own opinions and your own sort of approach and attitude to the material. And so at no point do you then start imitating someone else's way of interpreting that material. And so in that sense, it's a safer way to learn new music.
Yeah, I guess as well that singers that don't necessarily have that ability to play the piano accompaniment, I think there's often that worry of taking an aria to your accompanist for the first time and being fully aware of the bars of rest for the singer and between the voice and then the piano takes over, or indeed the orchestra. So yes, it's a
Yeah,
good approach to
I think
have,
so. I think
I guess.
it also forces you back to your musicianship, the musicianship that you were building while you were at college. Really looking at the score, really looking at the markings, really understanding what it is you have in front of you, instead of listening to Callas and then listening to her about 15 times and then singing it like her. And the other way around is that you
Yes.
listen to as many different recordings of something as possible, so that you negate the possibility of imitating anyone and imitating their mistakes as well. That's
Yeah, I was just gonna say, it's one of those things where you get it's a very slippery slope, because if you learn
yes.
it in wrong, because you heard it wrong, and then, but that's also, it's funny because also we're talking about creating music for people to engage with the score in an audible way, but it's still, you're saying, don't only listen to my songs, go and find them and learn them at the same time.
Yes, because even now, I even when I listen to the album is a point in time for me and my relationship with the songs. I think I would sing a lot of them very differently now. And where are we now? We're about 6 months after we went into
Writing,
the
yeah.
studio. So already, well, that's the nature of music, isn't it? That it's always evolving and it's always changing. Even with the same voice and the same performers, your opinion about the material changes over time, and you be, if it's good material, you're inquisitive and you want to see, oh, if I did that, what, how would it change the song? If I emphasized that instead of that, what sort of other things would surface? And I think you always need to be inquisitive about the material that you're singing. Otherwise, you might as well pack up and go home.
That's a good
Yes.
point.
Yes, good advice. Yes. Well, you obviously came to know Coleridge Taylor's work so well, but we wanted to know what was the most surprising thing that you discovered about his work.
How varied it is. On the surface, it looks like a big old slice of Victoriana. And that all of the songs are quite strophic. So one's initial response is, oh, this is quite simplistic. And then you start actually digging into the songs and you realize that there's a lot of detail, there's a lot of subtlety. He sets women's poetry extremely well, which I found quite surprising. I don't know, he just seems to have an affinity with women talking about being women.
Yes.
And he sets that poetry, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Christina Rossetti, particularly well. And yeah, there are lots of things, but really it's the detail, it's the warmth, and yeah, that actually there's quite a wide variety within his style. You have everything from sort of Puccini-esque type songs to music hall, as I was saying, in Inside Heart and Hereafter. But there's another voice which is distinctly his. It is Victorian on the surface, but underneath there's so much subtlety and lots of detail, particularly harmonically. So yeah.
Is it right that he was compared to Wagner as well? Is that
I don't know. I guess he's compared to quite a lot of
Yes.
composers of his time, Mahler being one, Wagner being another, Dvorak, and but I think he does have a very distinct voice that is very
His own.
different from
Yeah.
from the others, that is uniquely his, and there's a freshness and a youth about it, which I love.
Amazing.
Wonderful.
Can you tell us about your collaboration with Simon Lepper, your pianist on the album? Where did the partnership begin?
Way back in 2013, the BBC Radio 3 were doing a Schubertiade on, and I'm not much of a Schubert, sorry, I'm not much of a Schubert singer. And basically, no, I hadn't listened to any of it, and I'd avoided it like the plague. In fact, I avoided Radio 3 like the plague for the reason for the whole for the duration of the Schubertiade. However, I was asked to do a jump in for a colleague who was doing a jump in herself on the continent, and I had to learn a handful of songs for one of these Schubertiade type concerts. And so I got in touch with Simon and said, "Simon, give me an idiot's guide as to how to sing Schubert, because I've got to sing these four songs, and at least two of them I don't know very well." And so we had a coaching session on that, and it was during that he had these some Coleridge Taylor songs on his piano, and he said, "Oh, look, I've found these. Have you ever heard of this composer?" And I hadn't. And we said, "Oh, we really must bash through them sometime." We didn't for ages, because 2013 was quite an important year for me in my career, and things really took off in the direction of the sort of repertoire that I sing now. But that was when we started thinking about it, and round about 2017, 18 was when I spoke to Simon. Gave him a phone call and said, "Do you think this idea of creating an album or doing recording the complete vocal works of Coleridge Taylor, does that have legs, do you think?" And we spoke about it, and at the end we decided actually yes, it did have legs, and it was worth spending time doing the research I described.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. What was it like taking this music from the recital platform, because I know that you did do some live performances of this, into the recording studio?
Oh, it felt very, initially actually it felt very new and sort of uncomfortable because my only experience of these songs, you said, had been singing them live, and I'm a live performer, I'm not known for being a recording artist, and certainly of the things that I have recorded, the operas that I have recorded, it's almost been in a live sort of recording environment. Certainly the Caractacus was, that was a performance, a live performance, and the other, like the other two, they were with full orchestra, and so there was some kind of protection, there was some sort of comfort blanket that I was really familiar with. Just standing in a room with a piano and microphones pointing at me was a bit was odd, because I had nothing apart from Simon. It's just me and the microphones that were all sort of pointing this way, and Yeah, so it was very much out of me taken out of my comfort zone. And yeah, the run-in recital that I described a couple of days ago was really important because up until that point, which was almost 2 weeks before the recording, about half the album hadn't even been performed in front of humans. So it was half the album was still very new, which probably did me a lot of good actually in the recording studio. It took a pressure off somehow and really helped me to sort of focus on the sound of the song and the sound of the song as it came through, as it went into the microphone and then came through the mic through the speakers as we were listening back. But it was such a steep learning curve for me. This is very familiar territory for Simon and obviously for the sound engineer Patrick. But for me, it was 3 days of extremely hard work.
I bet. And I just wanted to ask, when you were in there, was it often the case that you, every time that you sang one of the songs, you'd sing it from start to finish, or did you do little sections? How did that work?
No, I so sang things from start to finish because that's how in my head I've sort of conceived them, not as little choppy bits. And then, we went into the listening room. We might do one or two takes, then go into the listening room and have a listen back and see if there were things that we wanted to adjust, speeds or the balance or some of the phrasing. And then we'd go back and we'd do another whole take. Sometimes the take was good enough that if there was sort of one tiny thing that didn't quite work, we might just patch that tiny thing. But as Patrick said, I can't remember where was he, episode 10, I think, no, a bit earlier than that. He actually ended up using whole takes of things, which is a real compliment,
That,
actually.
yeah, absolutely.
I'm really pleased. And we'd gone down with 27 songs, 25 of them made it onto the album. But we pretty much put down what, 8 or 9 in the first day. Which apparently is unheard of. But I think just the partnership worked very
And
well.
you knew what you wanted. It
And
feels like you really had a vision for what you wanted to achieve from these songs, if you can get it so precise, so quick, like so many in a row.
yes, at least I thought so. It was quite a scary thing listening to the first edit to see if we'd really gotten it right. But certainly, as far as you can judge in a listening room with the cans on, I felt that certainly the spirit of each song was served, and for me, that's more important than necessarily getting every note perfect and and just having everything very polished. If you've got the spirit of the song, hopefully that's what people will latch onto and will be inspired or drawn in by.
I have a question, actually. Do you think that the career as a recital artist has the effect of that, because you have to kind of put it out there and you can't change it once it's out there? Do you think that affects that mindset of going into the recording studio and we're gonna do it, we're gonna do it right, because type thing, like we have, or is it just who you are as a person? I don't know.
I think even for opera, once it's out there, it's out there. That bar's gone. The orchestra's going on, and whether you have remembered what you're meant to be singing and, or remembered where you need to be on stage or have you or not, you've just got to keep going. It's the same with any, that's the fun, isn't it, of live record, of live anything, live performance. The thing about a recording is that you can go back and listen to it and have as many goes as you like, really. and then you have a choice to decide which go you prefer. You don't get that in live performance at all. But no, the sort of recital aspect, it's really concentrated, and it's such an intimate relationship in real time with your pianist. And you know, that's the thing that's precious. That's the thing that people are really drawn in by. When I performed the Mahler Rückertlieder at Wigmore Hall, I'd only performed it once before as part of my January 2019 recital. And before that, I had never sung that in public at all. I'd loved it for 25 years, but I'd never performed them. But there's so much room for listening and exchange with your pianist, and so much room for stillness and intimacy, that actually that's the thing that focuses your mind, and therefore focuses the voice and focuses the partnership. So I loved performing those songs because it really almost forced me to get into that zone.
Amazing. Do you have a particular favorite song or segment on the album? I feel like it's asking you, like, who your favorite.
I do.
Oh, she does.
Oh. I do. Yeah, I shouldn't. They all feel like my babies, and you should never sort of have a favorite child, should you? Yeah. I love all my children equally, but Tears is my favorite one on the album. And I remember when I listened back to the first edit of that song, and I was really moved by it, not by my own performance of it, you understand, but by it. We'd gotten it right, whatever that quality of is. I think it was actually the quality of sound in it, really. We'd gotten it absolutely right. And you know, the final line of that song, it's a real sucker punch, really. So yeah, be prepared, have your Kleenex.
Go straight to that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a reason that you pick is there a journey that you go on when you listen to the album, like a song cycle? You might be on a specific journey because that's what the composer wanted. Did you line them up in a certain way, or did you just
kind of group them in a certain way, I think. So some of them are in natural groups, like the African Romances or the Six Sorrow Songs. And all of the others I'd grouped in terms of songs of old Spain. So Tears is one of those, Minguillo, and If Thou Art Sleeping Maiden, they come from Songs of Sun and Shade. And then the biggest section is really the last section, or the penultimate section, which is literary figures. So Christina Rossetti sort of features in that, Catherine Eastman, and other figures who were movers and shakers in the literary world around about that time. And I just personally found quite interesting. Marguerite Radcliffe Hall was a sort of an out lesbian, which I found remarkable, even though she was landed gentry and very rich, and so in one sense she could do whatever she liked. But you know, her songs are quite overtly sensual, or her poems are quite overtly sensual, and you know, I just thought that was a remarkable figure in the literary world then. So yeah, so there are lots of little stories. Do read the notes. I wrote the notes for my CD. So, you know, do read the notes. There are lots of little stories in there about the authors, who are, I think, just as important as the composer.
Yeah, that's very, very
and
important.
And listen from start to finish and not start and stop in different places, right?
Yeah, I'd say. I mean you can. I mean, we have such busy lives that you know, you stop and start, but you know, it's I think certainly sort of vocally a lot of people will kind of listen to the first few tracks and sort of, oh, perhaps it's not for me. But I think actually the album gets better as it goes along, almost by accident, really, just in terms of the interest of the songs and the variance in terms of how I use my voice in it. So yeah, I'd say listen to it from start to finish if you have the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, certainly. It's so wonderful that the production of this album was possible despite lockdown. Mm-hmm. But this is just one area of your work, and you've already mentioned the excitement of live performance, and hopefully we are just about seeing the return of that right now. What are you looking forward to the most about returning to the stage?
Rehearsals.
Yes.
Oddly, I'm not looking so much forward to performing as I am to collaborating. I'm much more interested in the process, and I love having these artistic conversations with directors or conductors or my colleagues, or you know, the context of the piece. The next thing I'm doing is Falstaff, and we're doing it in period costume, which would be an interesting one outdoors. But I'm already developing thoughts and ideas and opinions about Alice Ford and who she is. I think sometimes she like some of the other ladies, can be a bit anodyne, and we don't really think too much about what she says and why she says it. But she is clearly a very strong and resourceful woman, and she's also a mother. So throughout the opera, she is teaching Nanetta how to be a woman in the social construct that they find themselves in. Some of it is funny and some of it's quite serious. And so that, you know, it's a really interesting, I love that process. Mm-hmm. And I've really missed that, talking to people about artistic thing, you know, how we do our art and why we do our art. I think that's fundamental. So what you see on the stage is almost the icing on the cake.
Yes, yes. But there's, we've all been stuck in our boxes, shall we say, thinking of all these artistic ideas, and it's being able to voice those again with colleagues.
Yes, and have them challenged as well.
Have
them changed, and you know, as you know, stone rubs against stone, you know, you find that the edges are rubbed off, you know, it changes you. So I'm looking forward to rehearsals very much.
But yes, I'm so excited. So where is the album at now? It's
Friday the 28th is D-Day. So yes, I think I'm slightly dreading the reviews. I don't know. It's one thing having someone review your live work, and the live work that you're used to doing and that I've done for the past 11 years. It's quite another thing having someone review something that you worked so hard on and so painstakingly on. I'm slightly dreading that, but I'm also thinking, well, look, it's out there now. My baby is out there, and it is what it is. And I've put it out there for the reasons I've described. And, you know, like it or loathe it, that's what it is. And I'm really proud of it already, and really proud of the community that's kind of been drawing around it, actually. That's been part of the joy of Inside Heart and Hereafter, that, you know, we've got academics from Ottawa in Canada. You know, today it's a radio presenter. I've audience member, you know, the photographer, even Patrick has never been on that side of the camera talking about an album, and you know, lots of other people besides. And I'm really proud of the support that it's drawn from lots of different areas of the creative arts industry, and even outside the industry, and the level of audience engagement, because ultimately this isn't an album for critics. It's about audience members listening to it and saying, I love this music. I want to hear more. Who is this guy? How comes we haven't heard of him? And I've had a lot of those sorts of emails directly to me or messages on social media. And that's a real honor, actually, you know, to have audiences say, I love this.
So where can people keep up to date with what you are up to and what you're doing? And most importantly, where can they pre-order or buy your album? I feel like by the time this podcast goes out, your album will be out, so.
Okay, wherever it is, okay. Well, my website is always a great place to start. It's elizabethlewellyn.com, four L's in Llewellyn. And if you want to buy the album or pre-order it, there's a link on my website under news under sort of recordings and things, but you can pre-order it on or order it on iTunes, Presto Music and Amazon. So I think it is just those three platforms, but I think most people will have a subscription for one or both or all.
Nowadays, that's definitely the case, yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Well,
I think also it's on Spotify, or it will be on Spotify from launch date, which is the 28th of May. So
amazing. Fantastic. So right after they listen to this episode, you can hop on over and search for your album and listen to it. And what is it called? Just remind our listeners.
It's called Heart and Hereafter.
Beautiful title. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for coming to chat to us today. It's been so wonderful to hear about the album and to get to know you a little more. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you ever so much for having me and allowing me to talk ad infinitum about my album. That's really kind. Thank you.
Our pleasure.
We can't wait to listen.
Okay, Avi, I'm so excited about this week's quiz. It is an incredible one from Classic FM again, so shout out to them. So the quiz is it a Harry Potter spell or a musical term?
I'm so excited for this one.
I feel we're putting ourselves on the line here because I'm really bad at pronunciation, and also we should know the musical terms. But, you know, we'll see.
I'm a bit nervous also just because at first glance I was like, oh, maybe when you said that this was this week's quiz, I was like, oh, maybe this should be easy. But then I was thinking, I actually not sure I know all the names to all the spells in Harry Potter, and they might be very, very close. So here we go.
Yeah, let's go for it. Okay, so the first one, Avi, mm-hmm. is, so you answer one and then I'll answer one. Yeah, awesome. So the first one, Avi, we're kicking off. Diminuendo.
That one's easy. That's a music.
No, yeah, yeah. Start off nice and easy. Right, let's go.
Leggero. Oh, that's a musical term.
Of course it is. The next one. Apatio. I feel this is Harry Potter.
I'm going to say Harry Potter spell as well.
Oh, it's correct. Yay!
Yeah.
The revealing charm unveils secret messages written in invisible ink or hidden by other means. Oh, yeah. I remember that. Is that when he's got the map? Awesome. Oh, good.
Oh, because then it's like a peer-tium, you know?
Apertium. Got it. Okay.
Bigliando?
Now, the thing is with this one is that I don't recognise it as a musical term, but it's the liando at the end makes it sound quite like a musical term, but I don't recognise it. What we're saying?
I I accidentally clicked on it when I was moving down my page, so I know the answer.
Right, so I'm going to go...
So you're going to have to give this one.
Okay, solo. Ash goes solo. I'm going to go Harry Potter spell, you know? It's not. It's a musical term, isn't it? Okay, so...
The music term bisbigliando means whispering, and it's used to indicate a fingered tremolo on the harp. So to be fair, we don't play the harp, and we're not composers, so this isn't something that we would have necessarily known, but now we do.
Okay.
So there we go.
All right, next one. Ibublio.
Ibublio. That's definitely, I'm going to say, a musical term.
Okay, yeah, let's go. Oh, it's wrong. It is a Harry Potter spell. Ibublio jinx entraps the targeted individual in a large bubble that cannot be popped by physical force. I can't put that to a scene.
The Italian and... Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Next one is Sternius. I'm going to say Harry Potter spell.
Yeah, let's go Harry Potter spell. Correct. 65% got that. Ooh. Sternius is the indication of a dark charm that causes the victim to continually sneeze. Oh, well, that wouldn't go well in COVID times, would it?
No, not at all. The next one. I have to say, though, this is on Classic FM, so it is meant for musicians to get confused, I feel
like. Yes, it is, yeah.
All right, next one.
Mosmodre. I feel that it's...
That's a musical
yeah,
term.
Yeah, it's a musical term, like... Oh, it's wrong?
No. It's the indication of the dark charm used to conjure the image of the dark mark.
What is this?
The Pirates of...
I thought, like, Morse, it was going to be, something slow. I don't know. But anyway.
Super deadly.
Yeah, deadly.
Maybe that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Next one.
What's the next one? Next one is Muffliato.
Muffliato. I'm going to go Harry Potter spell.
I'm going to go musical term.
I got it right. Happens. It is a Harry Potter spell.
But that one was 50-50.
Yeah.
Possibility.
Yeah, okay. So it's used to create a disorientating buzzing in the ears of anyone in its vicinity. Very good. Oh, next one's easy. Fermata.
Musical term.
Yes.
Correct. 85% got that right and 12% got that wrong. That's craziness.
Oh, I know the next one as well.
What's the next one? Marcatissimo.
Marcatissimo.
That is a musical term.
It's like marcato, yeah. Isn't it?
Very marked.
See, they've been nice to us now. They've gone like easy, some really hard ones, and then they're going back to, hang on. Look at the next one. I think I've spoken too soon.
Next we have... Apogno?
Yeah, Apogno. I don't recognise that, so I'm going to say Harry Potter. Would you?
Yeah, let's go Harry Potter. I feel like I forget
the song. Yes, correct.
Okay. Woo. Okay. Jinx causes targeted objects to attack a victim.
Oh, gosh. Oh. Okay, next one, Avencidium. Yes.
I get really nervous.
That's a charm that turns an object into a tracking device. Okay. Very James Bond.
Ah. Okay, the next one's very easy. Sforzando.
Sando. And that is a musical term. Oh, it's like accent, emphasis.
These are...
System aperio. I feel that's Harry Potter. I kind of recognize.
No, I'm going to say that's a musical term.
Oh, right, okay. Harry Potter.
Damn it!
Yeah.
Well, that was fun. It seems we have a Harry Potter fan in our midst.
Yeah. 15 out of 17. You're both a Potterhead and a music terminology expert. 10 points to Gryffindor. That was really good fun. What'd you get?
That was great fun. I got 12. Shame. Oh. I really wanted the 10 points for Gryffindor. Damn it.
10 points for Gryffindor.
This week's question is, share with us an unsung song, aria, or composer. This is a hard one, Ashley. You came up with a really good question because it helps us listen and learn more music.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was kind of influenced by Elizabeth's episode, really, just actually taking some time. There's been a few occasions where I've been learning a song from like the RAM library, and then there's like no good recordings of it or anything like that. And it just got me thinking, let's see what else is out there. So I think for me, I'd like to share a composer called John Kefalla Kerr, and he's not in, the main canon, but I've worked with him quite recently, and his project was just really important. He wrote a song cycle that worked with Sunderland University in their kind of paediatrics department, talking about researching reactions to like diabetes within teenagers. And I thought that was just really interesting. And he wrote a song cycle for that, and I performed it, and it's called Insulin at Tea Time. And if you go to his website, it's like available there. But it's just very interesting. Yeah, it's good. That's what
That
I'd share.
sounds, yeah. I remember when you had a concert with that. I think it was 2 years ago now.
Yeah, it wasn't even a concert level. It hasn't been performed in a concert yet. It's just in like a workshop sort of thing. But I just thought it was very good that it was in such close collaboration with this department at the
Nonprofit.
university. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. That sounds amazing. I think I'm going to share one that I've sung several times, and I just am, I think the composer's is incredible. He's dead for many years now, but it's Itzhak Edel is the composer, and it's the Cantatat Evel that I sang in my final recital. But I just find those pieces so gorgeous, and they're not very well, they haven't really been recorded since the 1950s, and that one recording is like very, very old. So yeah, technically it's not unsung, but it's very hard to come by, and even the music's really hard to find. And I just think it's a beautiful piece of music, and it should be performed more.
And recorded, up to date
And
recording.
recorded. One day I will do it. That is it for this week. Thank you so much to Elizabeth, and also come check us out on Instagram, where there's more information about.
And thank you so much for listening to this episode today. We really hope you enjoyed it. Make sure that you rate and subscribe this podcast. That would really help us out. And make sure that you are following all social media platforms. We are AA Opera Pod everywhere.
And if you'd like to support our podcast and make sure that episodes come out on a weekly basis, check out our Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/AAOpera.
And if you'd like to get in touch with us, then drop us a DM, or you can email us at aaoperapod@gmail.com.
Have a great week. We will see
Yeah.
you next time.
See you then, guys. Bye.